This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Seven Irish college students are recovering after a dramatic fall from an apartment balcony in downtown Berkeley. The accident killed six students and affected many people in Ireland deeply. It also raised questions about how we keep buildings like this one safe and about just how little state regulators knew about the company that built these apartments. In this half hour of Forum, we'll consider what might need to be done to make sure structures like this are truly safe and to catch problems before they become fatal. Joining me here in the studio is Jackson Vanderbecken of the San Francisco Chronicle. He leads the paper's investigative reporting team. Jackson, glad to have you with us.
Good morning.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts on this. Please feel free to give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. Jackson, before we get into safety oversight more broadly, let's talk about this building in Berkeley specifically. What do we know about its history, the past issues? People there have complained about a variety of things for some time, right?
Well, we've heard anecdotal complaints and some written complaints to the city inspectors about leaks in the roof and maybe some dry rot in some hallways, but nothing specifically about these balconies. There are two balconies that are at issue here, the one that failed and the one directly below it. And those are what the focus of the ongoing investigation will be. The question of the general habitability of the building has been raised, but, you know, the question of what they knew about this balcony state is going to be obviously the target of many questions going forward.
And that seems to be a somewhat opaque system, as we'll discuss in a few minutes. Now, you've been looking into the company that built this complex, Segway Construction, and its relationship with the state of California, with state regulators. And it seems that there were a number of legal issues with the company that only really came to light after this tragedy happened. Talk about that.
Well, what we did was we looked at lawsuits associated with buildings that had been constructed. Segway is a main contractor. It doesn't do the actual work. It oversees the work. And so there's a total of, in the last 3 years alone, a total of four legal settlements that combined related to Segway projects. The total related to the payouts is something on the order of $26.5 million in shoddy construction or defects related to those projects. And they're typically paid by the insurance company. Segway has an insurance company. And then for the first 10 years of any project's life, once it's completed, there's a window by which the people who live in the units or the owners can sue the people that constructed it for certain defects.
And so those $26.5 million were paid by that insurance company or by
differing insurance companies related. Depends on who had the insurance company, you know, whether it's the developer or owner's insurance company or Segway's insurance company. It depended on the project. There are four separate lawsuits. So in some cases, they sue the developer owners of the projects, like in the case of Millbrae, the Park Broadway Condo Association sued the developer of the project. Segway built it. And so the insurance settlement, the $3.5 million paid out, was related to the Segway construction, but it wasn't – it was – the original lawsuit didn't name Segway as a party. So what happens is you have to look at all this stuff and see that in many cases these payouts or settlements go short of a court judgment. And at that point, the contractor's state license board is not notified that there's a payout related to a shoddy construction case. And that's the gap in the current regulations that has been exposed as a result of this collapse.
So if it had gone all the way through the trial process and a judge had ordered, say, penalties or restitution from a company like Segway, that would go to the state automatically?
No, actually it wouldn't. Only if Segway failed to adhere to a particular court order, which is normally a financial issue, you know, a settlement of a financial case. If Segway failed to honor a financial commitment and ordered by the court, at that point, under the current regime, Contractor State License Board would be notified, and they'd have to be notified by Segway. So the burden is on the contractor after a a judgment is issued and they fail to adhere to an aspect of a judgment, it's the burden on the contractor to notify the contractor's license board. All these settlements are done outside a judicial order. So then there's no enforcement mechanism by which they would normally be brought to the attention of the contractor state license board other than a typical complaint. And one of the issues with a complaint is that if you issue a complaint with a contractor state license board while your project – when you weren't trying to get money out of somebody, you know, you imperil their ability to get a license. You know, and so you might have a disincentive if you were in a unit, a condo, to complain to the contractor's license board knowing that you're putting in jeopardy your ability to return the money that's owed to you theoretically.
So there's a lot of issues with – there seem to be a ton of issues with this system, or at least a lot of little – you know, pockets and folds where information can either fall through the cracks or just not get in at all.
Right, because a lot of these agreements are completely confidential. In the case of
agreements, you mean?
Right, the settlement agreements between the contractors, their insurance companies, the subcontractors, the contractors, and the insurance companies. These suits are legal morasses in which everybody blames everybody else. And then there's some, you know, there are multiple complaints and cross complaints, and the insurance companies get in. And often they end up in mediation. And what we found is that mediators say that keeping them confidential is a key ingredient in both preventing further litigation and blocking up the courts, because if they can settle these things with confidentiality, the developers get their money because it's their projects that they need to fix, and the contractor's insurance pays out, and it goes away. And there's no reporting to the contractor's license board. And if anybody wants to check on the unit, it's exceedingly difficult to find out what actually happened.
So the argument is that by handling this, I just want to make sure I fully understand. The argument on in terms of the system as it currently exists is that by handling it quickly, quietly, and outside of the full court system, it is more efficient. It's, you know, keeping it a lower profile helps to prevent unnecessary additional legal proceedings. You make the thing go away. You go on with life, settle the problem, and it doesn't have to be a big thing.
And typically the understanding was is that these weren't life and death struggles. They were basically, these are just, you know, leaky windows, problem roofs, bad moisture proofing. This is a case in which an extreme happened, arguably involving shoddy construction. But the people we've talked to, you know, normally this is just sort of, you know, it's considered just a construction dispute. It's not like in the case of a doctor or professional license or even an architect or engineer where critical decisions are made that could imperil lives. This is just thought of historically has been thought of just kind of a cost of doing business. Let's just get this stuff settled kind of approach.
We should note that the company that built the balconies at issue in the Berkeley collapse, Segway Construction, has demanded that Alameda County's district attorney let it observe any more testing or inspection of the balconies. Inspectors have said preliminarily that there was rotted wood where water seemed to have permeated through, and that's how the balconies rotted down. This morning, the judge denied Segway's request to observe the testing or inspection. I have to admit, Jackson, that seemed like a fairly tall request for the company to be able to say, no, we want the investigation to proceed like this, and we want to be in on it. That seems like a really intimate relationship for a company that may have to bear, potentially, some culpability.
Well, I think that there's two sources of interest here. There's a civil litigation approach. Now, this is not an unusual request for civil litigants to observe destructive testing, as it's called.
Destructive because they pulled the balcony down.
They've already pulled this balcony down. This is the remaining balcony. Okay, there are two balconies. One flipped over and landed atop the lower balcony, and that lower balcony stayed intact. And what we have here is they've taken the lower balcony off the wall, and it could provide clues as to how the upper balcony, which is basically in tatters, was constructed similarly or otherwise. It's not definitive. It's only a kind of a guidepost, but Segway argued that removing it off the wall, even if it was done at the behest of the city, in the urgence of public safety, damaged the evidence. And they were concerned that, you know, any further damage to that evidence without their observation. And this was typical in the civil case. In a criminal case, of course, you don't have the right to say, I'd like to be there when the cocaine is weighed. I want to be there when you take apart the gun or check for gunshot residue.
That would be a highly entertaining criminal case.
Yeah. Right. And so, but what I think is that what's interesting about this case is you've got a clash of typical civil type liability for negligence and a criminal case. And this is very rare. They've only handled recently in memory only one deck collapse case resulted in a criminal prosecution, and it only resulted in a misdemeanor, and that was in San Francisco. This is not typically done. And we're not suggesting that they're actually going to go forward with the prosecution, but I think they stated that they felt the need to tell the families, you know, that they had looked at this thoroughly before, because the city of Berkeley was prepared to just basically say, we've gone far enough.
We're continuing our conversation on the Berkeley balcony collapse with Jackson Vanderbecken of the San Francisco Chronicle. We welcome your questions and thoughts as well. Please do call us, 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. Find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. One listener tweeted to us, did the builder avoid the system's rules, or are the rules lacking? Jackson?
Well, the system doesn't require that the builders notify the contractor state license board of settlements related to defect cases. There was legislation that said that parties are not barred per se by confidentiality agreements from telling the contractor state license board. But there's no affirmative obligation for a contractor to do so. In the case of Park Milbrae, Segway has argued that they weren't a direct party to the lawsuit, even though they constructed or oversaw the construction of the building. And they also said that they didn't actually make the payout. Arguably, the insurance company of the building owners did that. So, you know, there's obviously an open question as how you define what would make the contractor – what would trigger such an obligation to report. But right now, there is none.
Should also make note that the Alameda County prosecutor called Segway's request, the one we just mentioned in terms of being able to be in on the investigative process, the Alameda County prosecutor called that request an attempt to, quote, piggyback and spy on a criminal investigation, unquote. Another listener wrote us online, it doesn't take an engineer to realize that an average slender person takes up about a square foot of standing space. Since an average person might weigh 150 pounds, the idea of a 60 or even 100 pound load test, even with a so-called safety factor, is woefully low. Why not just go straight to 200 pounds per square foot and also require steel reinforcement in all balcony construction? This sounds like it's getting more a little bit into the weeds of the details of how the state laws are written, but it raises a lot of possibilities of where the laws might change.
Well, the code, the law is based on the construction code, which is not California. So they sort of look towards construction codes in general, and that's where this 60 pound per square foot limit is. Actually, it looks like the built balcony was constructed to the 100 pounds per square foot level. And nonetheless, of course, that argues that the members, the structural members that hold this deck, are secure. I don't know what the total weight was, but it appears to be much less than what this was designed to withhold. So
less than what it was designed
to withhold. Yeah, exactly. So in other words, it failed at a point where it should have not failed based on if the dry rot didn't exist. So the issue is how these things are constructed. And steel obviously would be, and also pressure treated wood, are both elements of a refinement of the restrictions that the city of Berkeley is now advocating. At least they have proposed it. And they'll need approval from the state board that governs how the code is drafted here in California. But steel, obviously, and the other thing is they've talked about vents, which is air vents, airflow vents underneath the balcony that it would allow air to get in and combat the dry rot. But it looks like the city of Berkeley is saying we won't allow or we don't want to allow these kind of cantilever decks to be built with anything other than pressure-treated wood or steel.
So just so I fully understand the way the layers of regulation, there's the You said there's a national.
There's a basically guidelines that are set by professional organizations in code, and then each state adopts that. Now, they can be more stringent, but typically California is not more stringent. So now when they want to depart from that, they just have to draft rules like the city of Berkeley is proposing to do, and then submit it to a state board to determine whether Berkeley alone can depart or whether the entire state should, for example, adopt this new approach.
So there's a national standard. States adopt the national standard but could go stricter. And
yes.
Then cities are subject to the state standard but could go stricter.
Right, if the state board approves. So now what happens is that if Berkeley does it, then the question is, will everyone else, all the other cities, will the code be generally reformed or will it just be for the city of Berkeley? So right now, the city of Berkeley has indicated that they're going to go forward with the idea of not allowing decks to be made of anything but pressure-treated wood or steel. And what this deck was made of is this engineered lumber, which is particularly susceptible to dry rot. And it was topped by what was supposed to be a waterproofing membrane. But something happened to this rubberized, stretchy-type membrane over the material, the deck, that it failed. And the members below were chronically appears exposed to large amounts of water.
Speaking of the regulatory challenges here, let's add another voice to the conversation. Joining us by phone is State Senator Jerry Hill, a Democrat representing the peninsula. He's proposing changes to the laws regulating problem buildings. Senator Hill, good morning.
Good morning, Joshua.
What are you proposing to change? What do we need to do?
Well, I chair the Senate Business Professions and Economic Development Committee, which oversees the Contractors License Board, as well as all of the regulatory boards and commissions that we have in California. And what came to light from this tragedy and with the great reporting, Jackson, thank you for that, because it really shows, kind of gets to the heart of the issue, which is that why didn't the Contractors License Board know what was going on? Why were the $26 million, were none of those violations of workmanship and negligence and settlements reported to the Contractors License Board so they could look at the quality and qualifications of the contractor? And frankly, there is a vacuum in legislation. Currently, if you are a health-related board or a health professional, or if you're an engineer or an architect, if there are settlements that occur, civil actions, binding arbitration agreements, a conviction for a felony, or any type of violation, there is a mandatory requirement that from the licensee that they have to self-report, as well as the insurance company that pays the settlement has to report to the Contractors License Board any of those violations and those actions, and then the board would have it. The legislation that I'm proposing will bring the Contractors License Board and all of the licensees under that board up to that same standard of reporting that currently applies to engineers, architects, and health-related professionals. And I think it's necessary. There'll be considerable opposition to that in Sacramento. I've already been, lobbyists have already engaged in it, and we haven't even introduced the bill because we want to make it an urgency bill if we can, but it will be a tough fight.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, Senator, in terms of the climate in Sacramento toward those kinds of changes. I know you said that lobbyists are already starting to make their voices heard on this. What about your colleagues? How receptive do you think they are to this idea?
Well, I think that the tragic part of our system and the way legislation works is that it takes death. It takes it took what happened in San Bruno, where we lost 8 lives. It will take the 6 deaths in Berkeley, sadly, to really trump in Sacramento the actions and the influences of the special interest to make good policy decisions. Generally, in many cases, what we find is that the special interest will trump good policy much of the time. But when you lose lives, when that raises the stakes, then we will see a change. And that's where I think we will have success at the end of the day, because of the tragedy that occurred and the fact that no one was aware of the previous behavior to then look at what activities and what actions, what construction that they had done and really provide the assurance that they're a good, safe contractor.
I want to get to the phones in just a second, but for those of you who may be new to the Bay Area, the San Bruno disaster that Senator Hill was referring to was not a building collapse. It was an explosion of a PG&E underground gas transmission line that killed 8 people and leveled a neighborhood in San Bruno. And the investigation after that revealed issues with welds in the pipeline, as well as with the way that PG&E was documenting its safety and maintenance work on that pipeline. That's what the senator was referring to. Let's go to the phones now, 866-733-6786, beginning with Raymond in Pinole. Raymond, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, Raymond?
Well, I just want to give you a little bit of information down here on at the street level regarding the problem with general construction and the balcony example that you're talking about now. And I think that from my experience, I urge the senators to check into this this portion of the investigation, which is really not known as yet. But the principal party, Segway Corporation, the building contractor, subcontracts out a lot of the work that they do. And then the subcontractors, in turn, go out and they hire these day laborers at these out in front of Home Depot, and they would then work for the subcontractors. And what happens in a case like this is the subcontractors either don't supervise the work being done by the day labor employees, mm-hmm. and or there's a language problem there, and or they supervisor will then walk away, and these workers will then go ahead and do the work, not knowing, not having it clear in their mind what it is they're supposed to do.
You know, Raymond, I think you're making a worthwhile point. Thank you for calling in. Senator Hill, let me put that to you. I don't obviously know whether the substance of what Raymond is suggesting is accurate or not, but how is the system structured right now in terms of people like Raymond who do have these kinds of concerns? If I was walking by a construction site or live near a construction site and had legitimate concerns about the way it was being built, how well is the system able now to deal with those?
Well, I think from what we've seen and historically, if there is shoddy or poor construction going on and someone recognizes that, notices it, they could certainly call Cal OSHA or call the contractor's license board, call the building inspector for the jurisdiction that the construction is occurring in, and you would see some action. Someone would come out and inspect that and make sure that it is working properly. But the system from a state level is, you know, contractors are licensed. They have to have a certain educational level. They have to have a certain knowledge level and certain specialty level of their particular profession and the ability that they have. And then on an ongoing basis, if there are issues of poor construction and complaints that they're followed up on, and there's discipline, there's revocation, there's suspensions of licenses, and so this does occur on a regular basis for many contractors in the state. So I think the system works, but the system needs to be informed of this. They need to know when those issues arise, when there are problems, and then they can take the action that's necessary. The Contractors License Board has never been afraid. They're reluctant to take action against contractors who break the law and the regulations.
Let me let Jackson Vanderbecken chime in on that also.
One thing I noted in our investigation, we found that the Contractors License Board, of course, like many other state agencies, has had its share of losses in budgetary compensation, shall we say. And what's happened is because of the downturn in the economy, they've been able to keep up on their backlog. But as more projects are done, I think the challenge will increase for this agency to fulfill its mission.
Let's try to get to a few more calls and emails before we run out of time. Rob in San Francisco. Rob, good morning.
Morning. My comment was if they would have had a sign before you go out onto the balcony, capacity, 10 people, and then have a picture below it of a balcony with more than 10 people pulling away and collapsing and the people, reaching up or trying to save themselves.
Some kind of icon,
How many lives would have saved? Having that little comment and the picture of the deck collapsing or breaking away from the wall.
Right. You know, Rob, that's an interesting idea. I was wondering, Jackson, why there isn't something posted that has a weight limit, like an elevator. The certificate of use inside an elevator tells you how many pounds of weight the elevator can hold. Why not balconies?
Well, I think that in this case, there are catwalks and raised walkways and stairwells. And I mean, you'd be looking at a sign everywhere you went. I don't think at that point it would be kind of like some people argue about the Prop 65 warnings. You see them everywhere and they mean nothing. And capacities.
Those are the warnings that say that this facility contains chemicals that are known to cause cancer by the state of California.
And the capacity of the balcony is based on the people's weight. You know, it's a, you know, a live load is assumed, and there's a comfortable margin. If this balcony was constructed properly, there would have been no need to post such a sign. So it's sort of like a catch-22, I think, and that they just don't post signs for a variety of reasons. People would remove them, and then there's a liability for when you remove the sign. And the bottom line is that the design of this balcony should have held even this weight, which wasn't that much. This balcony should never have failed.
Let me get to one more comment. Tyler writes us by email. I own a construction and design firm that is new to the Bay, and I need to note for the conversation that the CSLB is way overburdened. Everything with them takes 2 to 3 months for response, and my licensure approval has taken 8 to 10 months. Reaching them and adding more work to their workload seems foolhardy without the state adding to their budget. Senator Hill, briefly, how do we make these changes without just creating another layer of red tape in Sacramento?
Well, I think we can do it, and the funding that is provided to the contractors of the State License Board is by the fees on contractors. It doesn't come from the general fund, so the fees would be commensurate with the activities and the necessity of their workload. So I think we need to look at that very carefully. We will do that to make sure that they can keep up with whatever increased workload is provided, and I will look into that 8 to 10 months that the gentleman was referring to, because that is too long, and we need to reduce that.
That's Peninsula State Senator Jerry Hill. Senator Hill, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And reporter Jackson Vanderbecken of the San Francisco Chronicle. Jackson, thanks for talking to us.
Sure, nothing.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Laubert, Judy Campbell, and Suki Lewis. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Latoya Tools and Jeremy Siegel. Please do join us tomorrow for the 4th of July holiday weekend. We'll be in encore presentation tomorrow, back live on Monday. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News. Thank you for listening. Have a safe, fun weekend. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.